This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 304, brought to you by New York Comic Con. Welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast. This is episode 304. Why are you laughing already? What happened?
Episode 304, also known as the end of this month.
Listen, as soon as I finish reading Superman, the show's going to be a little delayed. I still have another 2 pages to go, so like an hour and a half. Just guys, hang on. Listeners, just read something in silence. I am Josh Flanagan. I am here with Ron Richards.
I am relieved.
And I don't know why that made me laugh. And Connor Kilpatrick, who's
I'm delighted.
Yes. Connor's standing on a box, as far as I understand.
On a box.
iFanboy.com is our website. That's where we put this podcast. So if you don't know about that, but you know about this, that's weird. We like comics. That's why we started the website and the podcast. We read a bunch of them every week. We read our stacks. God, I hope it's not like this forever. And we pick the best of the week. We call that the pick of the week. A review goes up on the site. We come here. We talk about it for 10 to 12 minutes, usually. That's, you know, just to be specific. And then we talk about the other books and other stuff. But really, we're just talking about the other books this week and then for the last 3 weeks. Next week, though, back to normal is what I'm saying.
Finally.
Oh, thank God. Just a regular week. Before we get going, there will be a reminder. We're going to talk about what happened in every single book. We were going to spoil stuff you didn't even know could be spoiled. You'd be like, I read that. I didn't even know what happened. Damn you. We're spoiling it all. So if you haven't read your books, read them and come back. Or honestly, it's fine. Just
you'll be fine.
You can't ruin that, which isn't that good. Oh, I'm throwing out a gauntlet. I think we should do this early more often. Ron, you had the pick this week, and you, there must have been, well, maybe I should pick a different week. Oh, I don't know. Maybe it shouldn't be DC.
Okay. Week four, the dregs.
So week four of the DC Comics relaunch, the last week, and finally, and I got to be honest, this is the closest to being broken I've ever become.
It's a lot of reading.
It's a lot of crossing genres. It's a lot of money spent. It's a lot of, I didn't read every book DC put out in the first place. That's what I keep coming back to. I'm just like,
how did I get roped into this?
Exactly. It's just like, damn you, Jim Lee and Dan DiDio. It worked. It's not fair. No, but with the light, I finally read the last 13 books to come out from DC. And as we were talking during the week, this was probably the weakest of the weeks. Yes. And we'll get into that as we go through the whole stack. But it was
good stuff, but on the whole, ugh.
Yeah, it was good stuff, but it was weird. It was the extremes. There was some good stuff and there was some bad stuff. But we'll get to that. But ultimately, and the thing is that it's when you have the listen, when you have the pick of the week and you've had 4 weeks of DC books picked before you, it's real hard not to be like, well, I'm just not going to pick a DC book. You know what I mean? Just to be contrarian maybe, in that regard.
Maybe for you it's hard.
Right. No, but I'm just saying.
That's my whole thing.
Well, my whole thing was that I tried not to be a contrarian. I tried to not eliminate DC just because of that. And I also tried not to bump up other books, you know, because like I didn't want to artificially do it. I wanted to stick to our mandate, which is the book that I enjoyed the most this week. And the thing is that throughout the whole entire DC relaunch, I have been waiting with bated breath for The Flash number one.
I love The Flash.
And as I wrote in the review on iFanboy.com, which you can go read, actually, Connor, I hearkened back to your post back in August when we were talking about the books we were most excited for. And you talked about Justice League, and you said you need a good Justice League book. You need mm-hmm. this book to be good, right?
Yes.
And that's exactly – when I read that line, I said yes, but in my head I was thinking The Flash. And that the Flash is my DC character. I don't know why. I don't know if it's because I watched the TV show with John Wesley Shipp in the early 90s. I don't know if it's because it was the first single character ongoing that I collected. The first DC book I collected was JLA. But then beyond that, I went to The Flash and then to Green Lantern. I don't know why I connect with this character. Maybe it's because I'm fat. I don't know. And I move slow? I don't know.
It's whoosh fulfillment.
Yeah, exactly. It possibly is, but for some reason.
Whoosh fulfillment?
Whoosh fulfillment.
Whoosh.
It's the noise he makes when he runs. Whoosh. Yeah.
That's not the noise he makes when he runs. It's sort of a low wheeze.
But
hold on.
But regardless,
I make the same noise.
But regardless, I don't have a super affinity to Wally West or to Barry Allen. I like them both. I see their values. But for some reason, you throw a guy in that red costume with the lightning bolt on his chest, and I'm there. I'm just totally there. And
unless it was that relaunch.
Well, yeah, we as was
the
well,
last, I forget
the well documented 2006, 2007 years of The Flash, which I have to say, and I mentioned this in my review, if there's any positive byproduct of this relaunch, is that Wally West's kids do not exist anymore.
You're not kidding.
I know.
I could figure out any other way to do it. Wow, I hadn't thought of that. That's great.
This whole thing was just to get rid of the kids. Exactly. We went a little overboard, but they got the job done.
Mark Waid's still pissed off.
Mission accomplished.
You make one mistake.
So going into this week, The Flash was coming out, and it was so I'm very excited for it. Flash, my favorite book. Please be good. Please be good. But there was a little trepidation because whereas previously we had Geoff Johns and Francis Manapul on The Flash, which started out really strong and ended kind of with a whimper into Flashpoint, it was riddled with delays and things like that. This new series of The Flash is co-written by Francis Manapul and his colorist, Brian Buccoletto. And they're doing the art chores. They're doing the entire book. And we haven't seen the best track record at DC with the writer-artist situation.
We'll be talking about that later.
Yeah, exactly. So
several times.
So with a little bit of concern to go into it, but the thing is that there is a long history of writer artist creators. I mean, you know, Will Eisner, Jeff Smith. You know, like there are people.
Frank Miller.
Yeah, there are people out there who do it. So it's not that insane to have an artist be writing the book as well. If anything, it allows for a total singular vision in terms of what they're doing. And I really think that while Manipal and Buccolato shouldn't be heralded for their writing yet, like there was some clear, you know, like they got to figure out dialogue and stuff like that, this was the entire package was what I would want out of a Flash book. It was fun. It was fast paced. It was it had that Flash feel to it. It changed it like didn't answer any of my questions about the Flash going into it. Does he know about the previous universe? What about Flashpoint? Where's Wally West? Doesn't answer any of that. And for that, I absolutely loved it. And what it just did was it, you know, and I don't think that it needs to rehash his origin or tell you who the Flash is. I think that the Flash, much like the, you know, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, are in the cultural lexicon where you know, okay, the Flash is the guy who runs fast. That's all you need to know. And you get into it, and for us longtime Flash fans, there were a couple of like, oh my God, I can't believe they changed that. Like, he's no longer married to Iris West. In fact, he's dating Patty Spivot.
Nice.
Right, exactly.
By the way, nice. Yeah.
Nice.
I was like, who's this? Oh, that's Patty Spivot. Hello. Yeah.
So little changes like that. But if you ask me, that's interesting because I never got to watch Barry Allen and Iris West get together. That happened by the time I came to it. That was a known established thing.
It happened 2 decades before you were born.
Exactly, right. And so now, you know, assuming that they're going to go in that direction at some point, we get to watch that happen again, which is kind of fun. But then on top of it, they just tell a straight up good Flash story. And the art of Francis Manipal he's one of my favorite artists now, just solidified. The style that he's been doing with the Flash and before that with Superboy and Adventure Comics, I absolutely love. It looks great. His compelling layouts and depictions of the speed and Flash running. The opening page when the credits, when the ring triggers the costume, you know, definitely gets a sense of speed. That double page spread with the title page was one of the best double pages of the year, I think.
It's one of the best looking books of the whole relaunch.
Yeah, totally.
It's beautiful. Yeah. It's gorgeous.
And then even down to like subtle touches, like in what I've been raving about, like I love the full page of when Barry's working and Iris is calling him and you see him moving through his apartment and the tea kettle and the iPad and all that sort of stuff. It just worked really, really well. And, you know, subtle little things like when he's, you know, when him and his friend are running from the people towards the end of the book, the people that are chasing him, and Barry dives into the water and the splash of the water spells splash.
Yes.
Like that is just such a subtle, perfect, like comics that only happens in comics kind of moment. I loved it. It was great. So like I was so relieved. A, I was so relieved that The Flash was good. And B, out of all the books I read, and don't get me wrong, like, you know, Aquaman, we're going to talk about Aquaman next. Aquaman was good. There was some stuff from Marvel that was good, but this is the one that I was like, yes, thank God, I love it. So Flash number one rounds out a 5-week string of DC picks of the week.
Well, the thing that stands out to me about this book is this is a different Barry Allen than we had in the last series.
Yeah,
which I think was very welcome to a lot of people. And he's not dour, he's not mopey, isn't the burden of being born again into this new world. He's just a guy being the Flash. And
yep.
I think that was very refreshing.
Yeah,
he's not an old beaten down adult, basically.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I mean, it's not me.
And I think this was a great book. The writer artist thing annoys me with the criticism because there's, you know, as you said, there's lots of good writer artists. It all depends on how good the person is. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be bad because it's a writer artist book.
Right.
No. Clearly, they're not as polished as Geoff Johns or other writers, but it wasn't by any means a bad story. I thought it was fun. It was compelling. There's a mystery.
And the thing is, how else are they going to get there without practice? You know what I mean? Without
but also, it was
well, that's like this is the main stage. So
well, true. No, I know.
I mean, if you need practice, then you shouldn't be doing. You shouldn't be writing.
Well,
these
yeah, comments. No, but you know, I mean, to hone their skills and that sort of thing.
I know that, yeah. But that's a bad. I think that's a bad way to go because.
Well, it's maybe
no. You practice. You practice by being a writer somewhere other than the NBA. You know what I mean? Like it's this is the top of the game. So if you're not good enough, don't
do
it.
That's fair. I can see that. That's fair.
But on the other hand, I don't think that was the issue with this book. I thought it was they juggle a lot of storylines, they introduce a lot of characters. Like you, I'm a big Flash fan, so I was looking forward to this book also. And I knew the art was going to be great. The art was great, but the story also delivered. I was pretty happy about it. I'm looking forward to hanging out with this Barry Allen.
Yeah, totally. Awesome. So as we've been doing for the past three weeks, we are rating all the DC books, and then we're saying whether or not we're going to stick with them. So that said, Flash number one, ratings?
Ratings.
Ratings. Goner?
Five.
Five.
Four. Four. But just.
All right. And sticking with it?
Yes.
Yes.
I don't know. Probably not. I'm not that interested. I think it looked really good.
Yep.
I thought the twist at the end was nice. I was like, oh, that's interesting, but I wasn't wowed by it. Like I do the same things that you mentioned, like the page experiments and that kind of stuff. Like that's fun and everything, but it doesn't necessarily equal a good book to me. But maybe not for me. I'm gonna go. Probably not. Probably not.
All right, that's fair. There you go. You just decided there. Okay. Cool. So, Flash number one. That was our pick of the week, or my pick of the week. But there were 12 other books to get through, including the much heralded, finally coming out Aquaman number one from Geoff Johns and Ivan Reese. However he pronounces his name, I forget.
Reese.
Josh. He's your buddy's back.
I have no history with Aquaman whatsoever.
For some reason, I connect Aquaman with you. It's the Arthur Vane thing. That's what happened.
Yeah, I read like two issues of Kurt Busiek series back in 2006.
And now he's your favorite character.
Yeah,
I think
exactly.
Josh, Hawkeye, and Aquaman.
As long as we're blonde, he's in.
I'm very mixed about this. On the one hand, I think that what we saw in this issue was the Geoff Johns that we've missed for a little while. I think we even saw the Geoff Johns here that we didn't see in Justice League. I think it was strong, and if you look at sort of the elegance and the dialogue and the sort of way that this book was constructed, you can see why he's the best guy that DC has, for the most part. I don't know. I was a little mixed on the idea of approaching the idea that everybody thinks Aquaman is a joke, because I kind of feel like you don't need to mention it. You just need to make him awesome.
Yeah, that was my one thought too. Like I laughed at that dialogue, but as it went on, I was like, "Oh, you're kind of overcompensating."
It's a little bit of fan service as opposed to telling the story. And I understand there's just two approaches to whether you're going to confront those criticisms or whether you're just going to not. Yeah. And my whole thing is usually to not and just be amazing. Just be great, and then none of that stuff will matter.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a choice. I can't make up my mind about how that works one way or another.
I do have to admit that the panel of Aquaman sitting in the restaurant opening the menu made me laugh.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Something about somebody in a costume reading a menu.
Yeah, no. And it's like that. It was funny. It was enjoyable. But I don't know if it was like the right thing to start off
and, like,
with.
To have a blogger attack him.
Yeah, I know. That was a little on the nose, really, if you think about it. I thought that Ivan Reese was good here. It was good to see him back. You sort of got to see some of that magic that we'd seen throughout Blackest Night. That was right. That's right. Blackest Night, right?
Yep.
And it was good. It was really good, but it didn't make me go, you know, throw my hand up and they were like, "This is Aquaman." But then again, I don't know if anything ever would.
I'm a big Aquaman fan, so I was happy that this issue came out. That was good. It looked gorgeous. You're right. It was a different take. It was a take I was not expecting when I opened the book up. I think, unfortunately, it's almost a take I think you have to make, because not just amongst the comics community, but in the general wider sense, Aquaman is a joke.
Yeah.
So if you're looking, if your lip service is you're looking to have people pick this up who don't read comics, which we can debate whether or not they're actually doing that.
I will be.
amongst the joke you public, it's even worse than it is amongst comic fans.
Yeah.
So it is the elephant in the room. He chose to deal with it. Fine. He did it in a funny and entertaining way. I think you probably get it out of the way now.
Yep.
If it continues for six issues, that's going to be a problem. But I think if it's just the first issue and we move on to the story, he fights these demons and then, or whatever these things are, then we're fine.
Yeah. That's a really good point. I like that idea. You can't keep doing this.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah. And time will tell with that. I thought, you know, it opening with a big action sequence and then going into the justifying who Aquaman is, and then tying in the merit. Like it definitely set the tone for what the series will be, especially with those freaky teeth Gibas that are coming out of the water. Like it looks. I mean, like it wasn't what I expected at all. And I'm
Warlocks.
Yeah. And I'm kind of.
Oh, man.
But
I gotta go farm.
It wasn't what I expected at all, and I'm kind of intrigued about the rest of the series now.
I'm actually kind of bummed for one reason. In the early promotional work, Jim Lee drew Aquaman with like Quint-esque sideburns and kind of longish hair. I thought that was an awesome design, and now he's back to the normal sort of high and tight haircut, which I don't know where's he getting that Atlantis, but I was hoping to see a slightly, you know, different.
He just goes in, the scene that they cut from this was that he just went into a barber shop.
Well, maybe he's got the Cyberns in Justice League. This is before, you is know.
There, oh, could be. That could be true.
Is there somewhere I can put my trident? So right here, or in the chair. Thanks, Harry.
All right. So ratings.
Ratings. I gave it a 5. I loved it.
I gave it a 4.
4.
All right. Sticking with it.
Absolutely.
I'm going to.
Maybe.
You're off.
No
with
babies.
This.
We don't have these
candidates. You mentioned this before. Like, you weren't interested in them before. Like, I'm reading it to see what it is, but I'm not that interested in it still.
Right.
Like, I'm not the audience for this.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, maybe. I don't know. Like, it was okay. Well, I know that everybody in the world is going to talk about how great this book is forever. I'm going to read it and go, it's pretty good, but it's not set my soul on fire.
All right. So, yes or no?
Would you like it better if he was from Maine?
Yes.
Well, because
I would have jokes. But I would be the one making the jokes, not in the book.
Just pretend it's from Maine. It's that region. It's New England.
That's not even. That's like saying superhero. Just pretend he's from Queens when you're from Brooklyn. It's a whole different thing.
All right. So moving on. So the much anticipated All Star Western, Justin Gray, Jimmy Palmiotti, and Moritat.
Yes.
So
you hear me?
So
yes.
So Jonah Hex in Gotham did not bother you?
It was so well done. It's interesting that the two main genre books, which would be All-Star Western and then Men of War, were both $4, which is, I think, is an odd. The ones that are going to be the most difficult to sell an audience on make them more expensive. Okay.
But it was they're printing less, so they've got
it. It was a slightly longer book. There was no backup in this yet. I guess that's coming later, so there's more pages. Yeah, it was a ton of fun. Hey, look, there's that lady. I just found her.
Awkwardly jammed into every page.
Oh, where is she? What page was it?
This big saloon overhead shot.
Okay.
She's in the saloon.
After the page after the title page.
Every time you see a scene in a saloon, does the same song play in your head like it does mine?
Yes. Clicking piano. They only had the one song in the Old West, and they just played it everywhere.
Exactly. Yeah.
This is basically a team-up between Jonah Hex and Dr. Arkham, and that really was what made this fun.
It was almost Sherlock Holmesian in a way of playing off the character of Hex versus Arkham. Arkham's sort of the nerdy doctor, and Hex is Hex. So it was
as soon as Hex walks in, like, the guy is just staring at him. He's fascinated by him, and then you're kind of seeing that in the background, and then Hex sort of notices, he's like, stop looking at me. And like, oh, and like they're contrasting, Hex is contrasting to Gotham City. There's a murder mystery going on. It has to do with a lot of that stuff probably that Snyder set up in Gates of Gotham. It's good. Like, but I don't know how long. I don't want Jonah Hex to be in Gotham forever.
He's gonna be, I think.
I know. So that really, like, I'm not worried about that.
Well, you know what it kind of reminds me of? I like the distinction of the like they called it out, like, what, you know, like life in the city and a man, you know, somebody who's not used to living in the city. Like, they made a lot of, you know, the city as a character. And it kind of reminds me of the years of Little House on the Prairie when they moved from Walnut Grove to the city.
Yeah.
You remember? Right. You know? And like, we got some good stories out of that. So you never know, you know, like.
Well, you know, it's just a little bit of, like, you don't know. Like, I've been reading Jonah Hex for a long time. That sounds like so douchey. But I can't think of a scenario where he would choose to stay there because he doesn't have any allegiance to anything. Or so if he hates it so much, what's going to cause him to stay there? That's a writing challenge.
Cash money.
I guess.
Yeah.
Well, I guess. Well, anyway.
Don't worry about it. I mean, that's the future. I mean, worry about this issue. Yeah.
Well, this issue I have no complaints about it. Although another woman with giant boobs and panties gets mutilated.
And yet nobody seems to complain about that one.
I did notice that. I was like, so anyone? No, Mortet's great. Oh, I see. That's fine.
Does Hex lore angles in this?
He might be.
Oh, can we please get off this track?
Connor,
he's actually kind of Batman-esque in this issue where he went around looking for answers and beating up guys in bars. I felt a very Batman-ish vibe.
Punisher, yeah. Batman, yeah.
Well, Batman because it's in Gotham. That's what the association.
I loved, by the way, my favorite, like, him in his Confederate uniform and the guy in the United States Army uniform. They're just staring at each other. I must take plain offense at your uniform. It's too bad. It's the only one what fits me. I love his obtuseness.
It's interesting. It had a kind of a Jack the Ripper-esque vibe.
Yep.
Because he's in a city at the same time frame, and it looked kind of like From Hell. Very much like that. It'll be interesting to see, as Josh said, how long this can sustain, because it was weird to end the story and not have it be over, having read you an extra 5-6 years. But it was fun. I enjoyed it a lot. Mortat's
very good. We've known Mortat's been great for a while, but hopefully this stage gets him a little more attention, because he's great. Yeah. Cool. All right, so ratings.
Ratings. I give it a 4.5.
I give it a 4.
5.
All right, sticking with it?
Yes.
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 All right. All
three yeses.
Yeah, you are, Ron?
Yeah, why not? I like. I'm intrigued. So, and then, plus, I really like those years of Little House. Okay. Justice League Dark, Peter Milligan, Michael Janin, the much anticipated, what we predicted would be a surprise hit, Dark Horse, book.
Oh, a Dark Horse book. I see.
No, I didn't mean that, but yeah.
So, give me a second to figure that out.
So what did you think of the Magic Justice League?
I seem to have liked it more than other people from the online reaction. I didn't really enjoy the heck out of this book. It was exactly what I wanted. It's a Magic Justice League. There's a giant threat that the regular Justice League can't handle because Superman sucks at magic and everyone else is just... And so they are calling together the magic heroes to fight this menace, and you can see that where this is going in that... At the end of the story, they will say, "We need a Justice League who can do this thing. You'll be the new Justice League Dark," or whatever they call them. And
they'll get T-shirts.
Yeah, membership cards and all this. But I really liked it. I like these characters. I liked Michael Janin's art. It was a different kind of getting the team together issue.
Yeah, again, I'm incredibly intrigued. I didn't love it. I wasn't like, "Oh my god, this is the most amazing thing in the world," you know. But I thought it was really good. I like the different kind of take on getting a team together. I'm not a big fan of magic, so it's hard to keep me sticking with it. But I enjoyed it, and I liked the art a lot.
I wanted to like it more than I did. I don't think it was necessarily bad. I'm not saying that, but yeah, it was a little.
I know what you mean, and I share that. Yeah,
it's still a little disjointed. It was hard to find a through line for it. So at the end of it, I wasn't like, "Oh, I can't wait to see what happens next." But yeah. I've been reading enough Hellblazer, written by Pete Milligan, that I do want to read further. But I've read a lot of other comics by him that I don't want to read further.
Yeah,
so. The art, I really liked at times, and then every once in a while I was hit with that sort of stiffness thing. But for the most part, I thought it was, for this style of art, I thought it was actually really good. It kind of didn't look like any of the other books we've got going on. It was pretty good. But
apparently in the new DCU, everyone knows where the Batcave is.
Oh, it's like a...
It's just like a hangout. Internet.
It's a clubhouse.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a community center. Store. Why did Shade refer to his jacket as a vest?
It's the M vest.
Yeah, but it's a giant jacket.
Yeah, but that's what it's called.
Yeah.
Should it be the M jacket?
Listen, the shade.
It's down to his knees.
It's more of a duster.
It's a duster, M duster.
Ratings.
Ratings. I gave it a 4.
4.
I gave it a 3.
Wow, sticking with it.
Yes.
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 All right. Well, sticking with a 3. Interesting.
I'm very excited.
That's not. It's not all about that.
I know, yeah. So the...
Very excited.
Very excited. Josh, why don't you take us away?
Oh, hold on. You know what? I got too much left. I don't think I'm going to be able to finish this in time. I don't know how you could make a book that was more interminable than the Legion of Superheroes book, but they did it. Superman 1 went on and on and on and on and on.
I read it first. Oh, that was a mistake. Oh,
you know what? I got to say, I'm honestly... I'm so glad to hear you say it, because I didn't want you guys to be like, "Oh, you're just being pissy about it." Like,
no.
Okay.
No, this was a chore. I feel like this book was beating me up while I was reading
God.
It.
Oh, God. George Perez writing it, Jesus Marino drawing it. This is the Superman in the present day, right, as opposed to Action, which is in the past.
This is what really made me upset about this book, and not the fact that it was long and wordy and annoying to death while you're reading, is the fact that this is the first time we've really met the modern day Superman. We've seen him in cameos here and there in other books, so we've met the old Superman in action, but this is the first time we've met the actual quote-unquote now Superman, and it's just it's not gonna turn anyone onto the character.
Yep. It's sad that this is Superman number one. This is the most famous superhero in the world. Superman number one of the books that people are going to try, even more than Action Comics.
Yep.
They're going to try this, and they're going to find this anachronism of kludginess, and stuff shoved in. And it's funny because this is actually one of the only books that I've read that I would consider an all ages appropriate book, but it was all about media conglomeration.
Yeah. Yep.
And literally the world's worst security guards. Hey, here's a fire. No, it's gone. All right, I'm not going to do it. There's a fire in your stadium, and you're like, oh, no, it's gone. It's good. I'll go look. All right, don't hurry. It's fine.
There was no inspirational Superman moment. There was no, like, you know, there was not, it was devoid of anything that would make me ever want to read this comic book again. And this is, I struggle with Superman. I'm, you know, this is why. It's not good.
No, this
is not. Well, it's bad writing. It's nothing to do with the character at all. This is,
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 panels on this page. And I don't have time to count the word balloons.
Yeah, I was just going to say, count the word balloons,
I think it's amazing that George Perez has taken his art style and condensed it into this. Like, it actually looks like a George Perez book.
He did the layouts, which I find myself reading it. And Jesus Marinos is fine. His art's okay.
I actually thought the art was pretty good.
But you could see how this would look completely different if he had drawn his layouts. You could see this looked like a George Perez laid out book.
Yeah.
It just wasn't quite there. You know,
how many pages did the script was?
Too many.
There was too much plot and not enough plot at the same time.
Yeah, amazing. Oh God, ratings. Yeah.
Ratings. I gave it a 2, 1 extra star for the art.
2.
Yeah, 2.
Sticking with it?
God no, I don't have time.
No,
I'm young. I've got life to live.
No. Okay, it's best to move on. all right, Green Lantern, New Guardians, number one. Tony
Paul
Bedard,
did not like this book.
Tyler Kirkham.
Tony Bedard. Yeah.
Similar to the other Green Lantern books, other than not Green Lantern itself, like Green Lantern Corps and Red Lanterns, I struggle to understand why this book exists.
It feels very superfluous, regardless of quality.
Right.
It's the most superfluous of all of them, I think.
Yeah.
Yes,
I guess this could be the Kyle book, but it's just too many.
This is like the Kyle and everybody else book.
Well, it's like when Barry came back, you were like, I love Wally, but why is he here? He's got no purpose.
Right.
And that's Kyle right now.
Yep.
He's got no. Oh, this did. I'm just so that we're not sounding completely negative. This had one of the things that I love about Kyle is that he uses the ring, my favorite out of all the guys.
Yep.
So that 2-page spread of all the construction workers holding the crane up, I was like, oh, that's good old classic Kyle. And I love that how he uses his ring is different than everybody else. That was a really great page.
Which I do like. And there was a major, major problem in the beginning in the retelling of Kyle's origin is that they never identified that it's the past.
Yeah, no, they didn't. I kept going back to see if that was happening now.
In the middle, they said
present day,
present, but they never said in the beginning it was the past. Yeah. You're right.
Which is probably a gaffe. Like I could see on the page with Kyle drawing in the coffee house where it says New York City Space Sector 2014. There's supposed to be a line there that says 5 years ago, or whatever, you know.
Yeah,
but they didn't do it. The construction page, the construction worker double page spread was great. Was like, yes, that's Kyle. I hate his new look. I don't like, you know, like I'm a Kyle fan, unlike Connor. Mm-hmm. At the end of this, I was just like, why does this book exist? So
exactly, it was perfectly fine, which is the best way to describe this book. It was perfectly fine, but it was did nothing to make me want to read it.
Yep.
In fact, it made me not want to read it with all the other rings in the land.
That's the thing. It's funny how 2 years ago we were raving at the other rings and the potential and the genius of it, and now I'm like, just go away. So
they overdid it.
There's no conclusion to it. It's just these 7 people doing the same things over and over again.
There hasn't been rings.
Well, there hasn't been anything compelling.
Yeah.
About it.
All right.
Look at the boobies on the sapphire.
Ratings.
Oh, no one's complaining about that.
Ratings.
Ratings. I gave it a 3.
I gave it a 2.
2.5.
Sticking with it.
No.
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 All right. iVampire.
It's good that Jay Lee's back. Oh, wait.
Who cares, man? Even if he's aping Jay Lee, it looked phenomenal.
The art was incredible.
The art is, I mean, it's very Jay Lee. It's very, very Jay Lee, but it's awesome.
Andrea Sorrentino.
Yeah.
Well, Andrea. But the difference between this and Jay Lee is that this exists.
Yeah, exactly.
Now.
Yeah.
And more than just the mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This was a disappointment in that I was really looking forward to, I've been really looking forward to all the genre books because I really want to support the idea of doing different kind of non-superhero books, especially from big company. But I thought as a story, and on the whole, this was very confusing. I didn't even really know what was going on. I mean, I understood there was some sort of vampire invasion. I just didn't have anything to hook on to. It was too many times I was going, wait, what's, who, what? What are they doing? And then it's just, I feel like this might be a trade read.
I really liked this. I was actually impressed by it. I think because of the contrast to the tone of all the other books, because it was so subtle, I would say that the big mistake that was made in this book was making the color choices for the captions were too similar. Like, you had to work really hard to figure out which one was talking, because one was sort of magenta and then one was sort of reddish. So they were very similar. And because it was so subtle, that actually added to it just a little. But I enjoyed it. I actually liked having to sort of work at it a little bit. It wasn't overwritten. There wasn't too much there. I thought there wasn't like a big first person narrative. I thought it was fun. It was a pretty good book, and I like the conflict that's coming. I like the relationship between the two characters, that they're you know, they loved each other, but now they're gonna fight real bad.
Ratings.
I gave it a 3.
Okay. I gave it a 3.
I gave it a 4.
All right, sticking with it.
Probably in trade, but not in issues.
Okay. Me, no, but I love the art. I'll flip through it when it comes out. I just don't care about vampire stories.
Yeah, I'd say yes. I think this cover didn't fit on it at all, by the way.
No.
Yeah, agreed.
So like, it was a bad move.
Yeah. All right. So speaking of sexism in comics, Voodoo number 1 with that takes place entirely in a strip club. Nobody complaining about that.
I don't think that's true.
They have been.
You know,
yeah, they have.
I know. Not as badly. But I thought this ended. I was actually surprised, and I really liked the ending.
I enjoyed this a lot.
I enjoyed it a lot, yeah.
She's obviously moving on from the strip club, so she's not going to be a superhero stripper, as people have been saying. This is a very nice way to introduce a Wildstorm character in the DCU. We don't know a lot about her, but we know a little bit. We know enough about her to make her intriguing. Ron Mars does a really good job of telling you enough, but not giving you too much information.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And Sami Basri is fantastic.
Yeah, no, I thought the art was really good. I thought it was an intriguing setup, and I want to know where it goes.
You can say that this was a big, sexy time in the beginning, but it's really like, it's sort of contradictory to itself in the correct way. Look at Voodoo's face.
It's not sexy at all.
Exactly. Her face is so dead.
Yep.
Like it's not like she's flaunting it around. Like, it's not a nice place to be, and you can tell.
Yep.
And so that's like, and it's contrasted to the way that she looks. Then there's like the scene where the strippers are all talking about their kids. And,
yep.
I mean, yeah, they've got big boobs and but you know, it's not straight up titillation here. I don't think at all. I think that to say that would be wrong. I love Voodoo as a character in the Wildcat stuff. I always have. So it's interesting to see what she is in this world and where it's going to be. And I loved the reveal, I guess.
The ending was great.
Yeah, so you're like, oh my, and then the other reveal that followed that.
Yep.
So, you're right, Basri was totally there. This was really enjoyable.
Yeah, totally. Ratings.
3.5.
4.
4.
Sticking with it.
Yes.
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 Okay, Blackhawks number 1. Mike Costa, Graham Nolan. We talked to Mike Costa on iFanboy Don't Miss earlier in the week about Blackhawks.
First of all, Graham Nolan. Josh and I were big fans of his in the early part of the decade when he used to do Detective Comics with Greg Rucka.
There you go. Hi. Did he deliver on this?
Well, it's interesting because it was supposed to be Ken Lashley, but then he got called back to more lucrative work outside of comics. So it was sort of a common Graham Nolan did the layouts and Ken Lashley did the finishes. So it's much more Ken Lashley than it is Graham Nolan. But
yeah,
it'll be Graham Nolan in the future.
Yep.
This was sort of the G.I. Joe in the DCU book that I liked but didn't love as much as I wanted to. But I liked it enough that I want to keep reading because I like Mike Costa, who did the great G.I. Joe books for so long. Blackhawks is a cool concept in the DC that I feel like is never properly used.
Yep. Yeah.
It's the military force. It's sometimes they're anti-superheroes, sometimes they're not. And there's all kinds of things you can do with them. And I liked that aspect of it.
Yeah. I feel very similar to this as I do Justice League Black. Dark. I'm looking at Blackhawks because I was looking at the word.
Always been on black.
I wanted to like it more than I did. I think this was an okay issue. It didn't blow me out of the water. I kind of wanted it to. Like, I wanted this to be really great. I wanted a book like this to be the one that you could be like, oh my God, you got to read this and tell everybody so that a new property would have a chance to shine. So,
a bunch does this week.
Yeah. And like, it was pretty good.
Okay. Ratings.
Ratings. I gave it a 3.5. Strong 3.5.
I gave it a not strong 3.
3.25.
She's never.
That's kind of how I feel.
Even exist.
Yeah. No, I know, but either just 3.5 if we're going by our website. Right. So, yeah, like 3, 3.5, somewhere in there.
Sticking with it.
Yes.
No.
Yes, but they better step
yeah.
up.
Yeah, I mean, I like the concept. It just didn't wow me, and I didn't love the art, and I thought it was, it's just not for me. I can't read everything.
How come his glasses have no temple on the cover?
Yeah, that's weird. All right, Teen Titans number one, Scott Lobdell, Brett Booth, could be considered the companion piece to the excellent Superboy that came out a couple weeks ago.
I think it's clearly a companion piece. I mean, it crosses over.
Yep.
They have similar characters. This, to me, was the most disappointing book of the week in that I really enjoyed Superboy. I really liked the story in this a lot. I thought they did a good job of explaining why there's these teen heroes. There's a problem with teen heroes. They're out of control. I liked the mix of characters. I've actually found myself enjoying these Scott Lobdell books for the most part, which is surprising. But Brett Booth is...
I'm trying to find a polite way of saying this.
This is one of the worst looking books I've seen in a long time.
Well, I am a Brett Booth fan. Brett Booth has done some of my favorite stuff. This was not my favorite work of his at all. I'm right there. I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was, like Norm Ratman is a good inker. But there's something about this where I'm just like, oh, it's not really my thing. So
it was something on each page where I was just like, oh, yep. I think there's a good story in here. If you had a really good artist, it would have been much better book, but I just can't get behind. Is that Wally?
Or Bart? I don't know.
I guess we'll find out.
Bart had the same hair color.
That,
so who knows?
That costume on the cover is atrocious.
Yeah.
Really? The faux hawk mask?
Yeah. That's not good.
Better than the one in the issue, though.
Well, I'd rather have the one in the issue.
At least that I understand.
Yeah. So that one looks very homemade, kind of like the Project Rooftops Spider-Man stuff that we looked at.
This is going to wreck that Superboy book we liked.
Possibly.
That's what I'm looking at. This like this is the thing that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Connor was kinder to it than I am. I don't think it was necessarily bad. I think that it's funny because I think that we built up our heads like, oh, these Scott Lobdell books are going to be, but they're not. They're not terrible.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I don't know. There's a lot crammed into this, and I don't have much of a connection to most of these characters. I like Tim, but it seemed like a different character.
I don't like his costume.
A different thing. No, I don't like his costume at all.
Yeah. The Vulture.
I didn't really like this that much.
All right, ratings.
Who took the photo of him and Batman swinging through the streets?
That's a good question.
I like that he framed it.
Hire a photographer to just swing along with him and.
All right,
you got that photo shoot today. Don't forget, we're shooting photos tonight. And
can I get a print of that?
Right,
yeah, right. I want to put it up.
Ratings.
I gave it a 3.
I gave it a 3.
2.5.
Stick with it?
No, sadly.
No.
No.
All right, Savage Hawkman number 1. Tony Daniel, Philip Tan.
The book I read after Superman was Hawkman. And I about wanted to give up comics.
Yep.
Like, for good. After reading these 2 in a row, I tweeted about having read the first 2 books and they were being rough. This was the worst book of the relaunch.
This is awful. The fact that you open up Savage Hawkman and the opening page isn't Hawkman hitting somebody with a mace, it means you failed. And then the fact that it ends with how it ends, like it just ends with this bizarro demon thing. Like, oh, it was just awful. And like, good on Philip Tan for trying to change his style a little bit, but he's still
make it worse.
Still not working.
I was like, okay, this art isn't as offensive as I had found it in the past. So like, that's okay.
It was the worst looking book of the relaunch as well.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, this is a taste thing.
I hate it. I hate the spiky Hawkman stuff.
Oh no! I mean, like as a style, I don't really get into it. But seriously, this is awful.
Yes. Writing. Yes.
I mean, it's not. There's nothing sophisticated about the dialogue or the way it's done. It's just the door is jammed. What are you doing? It's just stop. Shut up.
Ratings.
Everyone. Ratings. 1.
1.
2.
Stick with it.
No. Okay. DC still doesn't know how to do Hawkman. They still are baffled. Oh, good. Another good book coming up.
My favorite title of the New 52, The Fury of Firestorm, The Nuclear Men. Taking a page from Marvel in the long title. The writing debut of Ethan Van Sciver along with Gail Simone with art by the very good Yildiray Cinar. Unfortunately, this is just not good. This is just not good at all.
There was nothing I enjoyed about this. I didn't enjoy the writing. I didn't enjoy the art. I didn't enjoy anything about it.
I wanted to.
Yeah.
I was really trying to give this a chance, but that was very difficult.
Yeah. It was so ham-fisted.
So ham-fisted, yes.
I like the dialogue was...
The scene in the locker room with the two...
The main characters are both unlikable. Yes. Completely unlikable.
Yep.
Nothing to like about.
Whip-smart teens.
Oh, God.
And then this, like, Venom firestorm at the end. Yeah, I don't...
Just not good.
I'm good. And then also, at the moment, like, the climactic scene at the end was really confusing.
Yes.
So, like, they both turn into Firestorm, but it was kind of...
Well, they both turn into Firestorm, and then they merge and become Fury.
Yeah, but why did the one shoot at the other one right away? And how did you know how to do that?
They hit each other.
Yeah.
So he's going to immediately...
My favorite word balloon of it all was after they change... And then I can't even tell. I guess Ronnie, the next page, goes, "What the hell did you do?" Ratings.
Ratings. I gave it a 2.
2.
2.
Sticking with it.
No.
No. No.
Okay, no. All right. So the largest crime of the New 52 is that those fuckers made me read a David Finch Batman: The Dark Knight, and then on top of it, it's co-written by Paul Jenkins.
I guess you could call that writing. Now, Connor, you had previously said that you had read that was the worst book. This was a 1. I know we're supposed to do that later, but this was the worst book. I was like, this is terrible. Yeah. In every possible way.
Yep.
And it did not help that there were so many similarities to the previous Batman number 1 that I lost count.
Yeah, it was kind of funny.
I was like, wait, we're doing what, really? We're okay. Oh, you're doing this scene too. Okay. Yes.
See, I like it a little better because I like the way Finch draws Batman.
In costume.
Just Batman.
Yep.
Everything else, his Bruce Wayne was wildly inconsistent.
Yep.
From panel to panel even.
Look at the faces. The first scene where Batman shows up at Arkham on top of the, I don't know how he's standing on that. Quite honestly, he's got his knee bent, because the perspective shows the roof of the truck is sloping, but it's not actually sloping in real life, so that doesn't make any sense. Right. But then look at the faces of the guys, like the lifeless Botox faces of the sort of police there, and everywhere. Like the faces are all these like weird, not even grimaces, and then that. The woman with the bunny tail?
Yeah.
That's the oddest page I've ever seen in my life.
It's really eerie how similar it was to Scott Snyder's Batman.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, huge Gotham tuxedo socialite meeting. Arkham breakout.
Yeah, the rogues in Arkham. Yeah, really weird. Anyway, all right. Ratings.
Ratings, 2.
2.
1.
Sticking with it?
No.
No.
Never.
Never, ever again.
No.
Oh, God. So with that said, we have reviewed all 52 of the DC 52. We can go back to normal. Oh, my God. I need a vacation. Oh, God. But we're finishing the New 52 just in time for the New York Comic Con because I can't get enough of comics.
So we can have awkward social experiences.
So the New York Comic Con is coming, and it's going to be in New York City at the Jacob Javits Center, October 13th through the 16th. It's going to be a good time. We will be there in full force, so we hope to see you there. If you're going to be in town, go into it. There's tons of comics guests that are going to be there. Mr. Frank Miller, the man behind Holy Terror. Jeff Johns, Frank Quitely, Jason Aaron, Robert Kirkman, Kieran Gillen, Jim Lee, Mike Mignola, Scott Snyder, and tons more. If comics really aren't your speed, or if your girlfriend or boyfriend or whoever else doesn't really like comics, but they like movies and things like that, they've got tons of stuff, tons of media stuff for you to enjoy, including Mark Hamill, Rose McGowan.
I care.
Mark Hamill, Rose McGowan, Kevin Smith, they're all going to be there.
Noich.
You always say that. So
yes.
Go to NewYorkComicCon.com. That's all one word, NewYorkComicCon.com. Pick up tickets now. A 4-day pass as of now is just $85 to get in for the whole shebang. Tickets are pretty much about $35 a day. Saturday is sold out if you only want to go on Saturday. So make sure you go on, you either get your 4-day pass to go to go to Saturday or a 3-day pass, or just go Friday or Sunday. But either way, we'll see you there. Go to NewYorkComicCon.com.
He can speak English, but he does not speak it good like we do.
Yeah. All right. So moving on to the rest of the comics. Brian Bendis and Mark Bagley's Brilliant number 1 came out. I reviewed it on the site earlier in the week, but I'm curious to hear what Josh and Connor thought of it.
I want to know who approved that cover.
Yeah.
That is a shit cover.
Well, that was my biggest problem with this was the art.
Yeah.
In that, I don't know if it was because Joe Rubenstein inked it or whatever, but there were some panels where I was, like in the opening sequence of the bank robbery, when the guy gets, when the security guard shoots him, and that middle panel where the guy goes, "You fuck, stick that gun up your ass." Like, that looks like a bad indie comic book.
It doesn't look
like Bagley.
It looked like it was done in spare time.
Yep.
With not that much enthusiasm to make it perfect.
Yep. Yes.
This was very underwhelming.
Yeah.
I was very excited for it. Love Bendis' work, especially his creator-owned stuff, like Bagley. But this was – I finished reading and I was like, all right, there's no compelling reason for me to continue reading this at all.
Yeah.
I mean, for a first issue, it didn't really tell you much. There was a lot – I mean, I don't mind the talking, but there's a lot of talking about things that didn't seem to matter about the – you know, plot-wise.
Yeah, and I didn't really – I kind of got who everybody was. I feel like this might be a good – graphic novel.
Yeah, I mean, I really like the premise. I like the idea of, you know, college students figuring out superpowers, and it's a very realistic world. It's a world without superheroes. I like that. I was worried about Bendis writing college student dialogue, and I didn't think that was too off. I was worried about Bagley drawing college students, which in some cases was, you know, apparent that he, you know, modern styles and things like that. But I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued to see where it goes. You know, we got introduced to the characters, but I don't really know them yet. So I don't know. I'll stick with it because Bendis rarely proves me wrong, but wow, Bagley, I really fell short on the art. So
I wonder if Bagley is a pure superhero artist.
That's a good question, yeah.
Does he need the costumes and things?
Yeah.
Because one of the things about Spider-Man was that out of the costumes, his characters weren't that great.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know, I just didn't feel anything, any connection to this book whatsoever.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I think he needed some editing.
Yeah, that's one of the problems, like, too, is that these books aren't edited, yeah.
Well, like you don't need all this. Yeah, this can be cut, you know, at least in terms of an issue.
Yeah.
If you're talking about the form. But
all right.
Abe Sapien, The Devil Does Not Jest, #1. It's just another one of those minis, the endless BPRD minis that come out. Just a regular Abe Sapien story. And Tom Caters wrote a thing on the site a little while back about how he thinks Abe Sapien is more interesting than Hellboy. And I think this is just another case for it. It's just another really good, fun story. And the last page on this one was great. I think that he did something with, had this really big scale to it that was really pleasing and exciting. And I just, whenever I get the chance to tell people, like, here's another place you can read these wonderful characters without, you know, just jump in, this is another one. Just check out this Abe Sapien issue. Totally fun, really good book.
Ultimate Spider-Man #2.
Now, this is the opposite of brilliant. I thought this was very emotionally engaging. The characters were interesting. It was a gorgeous-looking book.
They're knocking it out of the park with this. They're really, again, somehow Bendis is taking the Spider-Man character and now with Pacelli and doing something special.
One thing that I've noticed is that you listen to us talking about the DC books, and we've been talking about how a lot of them are wordy.
Yep.
And have all sorts of stuff. And it's because a lot of those words are wasted. This book had a lot of words in it, but they all worked for me.
They're effective words.
Yeah, and they let me get to
how good the words are. It's not about the amount, the number. It's how good they are and how important they are, how much they convey the story or don't, yep, or the character.
Sarah Pacelli is doing one of the most beautiful books on the market.
Yeah.
Really, I mean, I'm continually like, just, wow, that's really good looking.
You know what I'm really excited about? I'm excited about the change in the power set.
Yeah, I think that's really
smart. Instead of just taking, you know, okay, he can stick to walls and shoot webs, like, no, he can turn invisible. He's got the stinger. It's like it's evolving the idea of Spider-Man. It makes sense because if Osborn's still doing the experiments, they would evolve, you know, like, and the Spider would have different powers. I really like that. Like, it's a subtle touch, but I like it. So
what people don't understand is that the whole race thing was just a cover for the fact that he was changing the powers.
Yeah, exactly.
So that he was like, I'll get them to complain about this.
And nobody seems to be complaining about that.
The only thing I have a problem with, and it's very minor one, it's not a big issue, is that I can stretch my sense of believability with high school students, but as an elementary school student, Miles is way too smart.
Very Damien-esque.
And talks way too well.
How old is he supposed to be?
He said that the opening page says he's an elementary school student in the little opening recap page.
I got a middle school vibe. So
yeah.
So for me, it was like, this kid is not, you know, 10.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Hmm.
Right. Other than that, though, it's minor.
Okay.
But
I love his fat friend. Fat, nerdy friend. I want more of him.
I think you probably will. Or he might die. I don't know. All right, Rachel Rising #2 from Terry Moore. Did either of you guys pick this up? Or?
Yep.
No.
Chilling. Like, if this is a I got that chilling horror vibe that he's going for, and I was like, wow, I didn't see it coming.
He's really going for it.
He's really going for it, and like it was that downright freaky at some points. Like the whole scene with the Rachel talking to the mortician, you know, and like that. I thought it was great. I just thought it was really good.
The only thing about this is I actually got a little lost in places. I was like, I don't know what I'm looking at here. But it was a creepy horror movie kind of thing. Yeah. Because of that, though, I wasn't so into it.
Yeah, little girl's plastic wrap strangle.
Yeah, no, I get Jeez. That. I get
but
that.
Yeah, no, I generally don't like the horror genre, and so I'll be curious how it goes. But I continue to be impressed though.
Yeah,
Wolverine number 16, real briefly. I love the art. I don't know if it fits Wolverine, but I love this Gore.
He was the fill-in on Y.
Yeah. Oh, it's great. But this book did get me my laugh out loud moment because this is a little one shot that's continuing the whole.
It sounds like it's ending it.
Yeah, it seems like it. The whole kind of destruction of Wolverine. Wolverine's got a feral, and Aaron barring a Bendis device and doing the talking heads of all the other heroes talking about Wolverine, which I was like, give or take. But Namor's comment, a worse swimmer you would not want to meet. And then later on in the book, when Wolverine goes, they're wrong, every damn one of them. And then small text, except Namor, I can't swim worth a damn. That callback alone made me laugh out loud.
So. That was very funny. This was the wrap up to this whole breakdown Wolverine story. At the end of this, Wolverine comes back because he, while living with wolves in the woods, finds this ring of people who are pitting wolves against kids in a ring and filming it for the internet. And so he does what he would expect and with his claws to these people.
Yep.
And then all of his friends show up to bring him back to society. So now he's probably coming back. So yeah, it was fine.
And then they herald next issue as a starting point. So start reading here, it says, and it's picking up, it's tying in the schism. So the next chapter of Wolverine will begin.
Will it be 17.1?
No.
Because that's the only way that I know that I can jump on an issue now.
Yeah, unless you read New Avengers 16.1, which essentially was just New Avengers number 17.
Oh, God, Marvel. What?
So many problems with this, unfortunately. I mean, New Avengers 16.1 on paper should have been a book that I loved because it was Bendis doing a jumping on point with Neil Adams. Wow. Well, I'm glad Bendis can check that off the bucket list that he's working with Neil Adams, but it's like it read like a Mad Magazine.
I like how Bendis is just getting it every way this week.
Yeah, he really is. I mean, like, seriously, I mean, Neil Adams, I know he's getting older and style change, but like it's gone from the photorealistic Neil Adams that I love has become an overly rendered cartoony style now, which and then this was completely not a jumping on point. It completely the only attempt at a jumping on point was the scene with the Avengers where it was over dialogued. And this essentially is just the next issue of the series. So
these point ones have been an utter disaster,
except for like one or two.
No, but I don't mean content wise. I just mean in terms of marketing, executing what they're supposed to be, what they represent.
Yep,
it's a disaster.
Yep, agreed. And you know, and enough with the 9/11 stuff at the back. But anyway, that's a whole other story. So New Avengers 16.1, a shame. But real quickly, I wanted to praise The Amazing Spider-Man number 670 and Venom number 7, because when you talk about doing event books and all that sort of stuff, like honestly, this is going in the direction of event book done right, because between Amazing Spider-Man and Venom number 7, the story moved forward, Venom tied into Spider Island but still has the Flash stuff going on with it, and there is a scene that both issues share, but from different perspectives, and they had the same dialogue, and it was consistent. And if you're reading both books, it just was like, oh, cool! Like it was that great shared universe moment that didn't detract from either issue, but it just made the story that much tighter and stronger. And so I was very very impressed.
Having not read the Spider-Man issue at all, I thought Venom 7 on its own was great.
Yep. Yeah.
Although I thought he was going to make me cry at the end, and he didn't.
Yeah.
Didn't note here.
Yeah. So I mean, and that's a sign of a good event book. If you enjoyed Venom and you're not reading any of the Spider-Island stuff, and they did a good job, and then I'm reading Spider-Man and Venom, and they worked together in concert perfectly, and it was fun.
Now, while a Jordi Bernet book came out this week, it was not a Jonah Hex book. I got a good Jonah Hex book also, but I also got a good Jordi Bernet book with wonderful colors by Dave McKeag, by the way. Basically, this is American Vampire number 19 is like an origin story for Skinner Sweet. But the real story for me was just that Jordi Bernet made it look very, very, very good. And it was a little Civil War action going on in here, or post Civil War actually, because it's
well, there were cowboys and Indians, so it wasn't that
fighting the Indians.
It was not that far off from his Jonah Hex stuff. It was pretty much the same genre, same place and time. So it was very familiar, but very new at the same time.
Yeah, the colors really let you sort of know you're reading a different thing, because they look different than Jonah Hex did. It was it's one of those like little stories that maybe isn't going to blow your face off, but it's important to understand who the characters are. I love the backstory that these characters have. So
there was a dude getting his ears cut off.
Yes,
and we got to see that, which was fun.
Loved it.
The return of Secret Avengers continues, but this time Warren Ellis and Kev Walker again proving that you could actually do good Secret Avengers comics. I love Kev Walker.
I didn't enjoy this as much as the last
issue. I was going to say, though, that the McKelvey issue gets a slight edge over this one, but this was still good. I like the big ship separation. It reminded me of Star Trek. The saucer sep. I give the McKelvey Ellis one an edge over this one, but this was still very enjoyable and shows that this book could actually be good if it's done correctly.
So, cool. Yeah. And that's everything that we have to say about the comics, which was a lot, obviously, if you're going to check your watch right now. But we're
done now, right? We're done?
We're done. We're going to look at the top five picks of the weeks by percentage by the iFanboy community and as it goes. Number five, Ultimate Spider-Man, number two with 3%. Number four, Justice League Dark, number one with 5%. Then number three, Flash, number one with 10%. All-Star Western, number one with 17%. And Aquaman number one was the favorite, 59%. That's been pretty much the dominant book this week for everybody.
Crazy.
Look at a couple of user reviews. First up is Farside 0013 with talking about Ghostbusters 1, now and ongoing. Gave the story a 3 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5. Nobody had it for pick of the week. And the whole review is, I've always been a Ghostbuster fan, but for whatever reason, I've never liked any of the comics based on the franchise enough to make it a regular read until this one. I think a lot of that has to do with the art, since the cartoon style does a better job of showing the world of Ghostbuster live and is fun and exciting, despite the occasional eldritch horror they have to face. It is also evocative of the cartoon series, even though it is a new design for a team that is closer in line to the original actors. Story-wise, it does a good job of setting up the characters and the feeling of a challenge coming on the level of Gozer, while at the same time doing a great job capturing the essence of each of the characters as well as the pacing of the humor from the movies. Overall, if you're a fan of Ghostbusters, this is a great offering from IDW that I recommend you pick up. I'll certainly be sticking with it.
I think that here's our error in the script. He gave the story a 4 out of 5. Sorry, that was a typo.
Okay.
So story a 4 out of 5 or 5 out of 5 on Ghostbusters.
There you go. Ray.
I've got the Blu-ray here. I'll just watch that.
True. Yeah. It's
hard to capture those. I mean, licensed properties, the question is always capturing the actors. But in this case, those particular actors, how can you capture Bill Murray on a page?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. Everyone always scratched their head as to why did they change the cartoon so dramatically? Because I think they just didn't even try to compete with what the cartoon was, what the movie was. So it's a tough road to hoe. So glad he liked it, though. Conversely, Corey Roche reviewed Kick-Ass 2, number 4, and gave the story a 1 out of 5 and the art a 2 out of 5, and nobody made it their pick of the week. And this excerpt from Corey Roche's review of Kick-Ass 2, number 4 says, "I read comic books because they're fun, they're entertaining, and ultimately I find them pleasurable. I'll spare you the long discourse about the various cathartic pleasures derived from drama, violence, comedy, etc. But what I saw in Kick-Ass 2 simply didn't provide any release for me. It simply wasn't enjoyable anymore, and I'm worse off for having read it. Thanks, Mark Miller. I've enjoyed your work so far. I'll probably keep reading some things, but I've had my fill of this. Goodbye."
Goodbye, sir.
This good day, sir.
This Miller loves to push the envelope, and this included murdering children and rape. So, yeah, go with it.
I didn't go with it.
Yeah, it's sad to think of the first mini was so much fun and interesting, and everybody was talking about it. And this mini is almost completely under the radar.
It doesn't even matter. Yeah,
people who are talking about it are split down the middle.
Yeah. Because that story was done.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And this is just like, what else can I squeeze out of it? I can't even say that. I haven't read it, but that's what it feels like. It's what it felt like all along, and that's what the reaction feels like.
Yep. Oh, well. So go to ifanboy.com/comics. You can do your pull list, and you can rate and review your books, and we might read a review of your comics on the show. Sure, words are fun. we're going to skip the email this week because we ran long, but you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. So we wanted to revisit our voicemails to remind you that we do have a voicemail line. You can call in and ask us questions, just like Dave.
Hey, guys. It's Dave in Washington, D.C. I have a question. I have two questions, actually. First question is, wondering where the best comic book museums that you guys have been to or heard about are. And the second question is related. I'm wondering who has the the biggest collections of comic book original art or comic book, you know, I don't know, related things that would be cool for museums. That'd be a good resource. Let me know. Thanks.
Here in America, you've got unfortunately, it just passed, so you just missed it. But next year, if you want to plan to go to the Baltimore Comic Con, Steve Jeppy opened the owner of Diamond, ironically, opened a museum down in Baltimore. I believe it's right by Camden Yards and the Babe Ruth stuff and all that sort of stuff, and it's a comics museum. And it contains a lot of stuff from his collection because he spent a lot of his fortune over the years on comics. But this is supposed to be really impressive. I haven't been there, but when we were at Baltimore Comic Con, I knew people who went to check it out and said it was really cool. So that's an option. Also, here in San Francisco, there's this comic book cartooning and comic art museum or something like that. It's small. It's a bit more of an art gallery. And if you're ever in San Francisco, you want to check it out, look at what they're displaying. Like a couple years ago before Gene Colan passed away, they had a Gene Colan exhibit, and Gene Colan came and did his talk and all that sort of stuff. It's cool, but it's less of a museum and more of a gallery kind of setting.
There's in New York, there's MoCA, the Museum of Cartoon and Comic Art.
Yep. Or
I might have that mixed up. I've been there once. It's a kind of actually a little small room sort of on an upper floor, but they have rotating exhibits and some permanent stuff.
MoCA and the Cartoon Art Museum here in San Francisco are very similar in that they're small and they do kind of rotating exhibits, that sort of thing.
I've been to a few exhibits over the years that aren't permanent that would have been really interesting. I went to a museum, the Museum of Jewish – I think it was the Jewish Museum, I think is what it was called, on the Upper East Side, and they had a exhibit of Jewish artists, and there was some amazing stuff there. Bernie Krigstein, Jack Kirby pages, Chris Ware original art, stuff like that. It was mind-blowing. Yeah. But those are the ones.
As far as collections go, I don't know if anybody was like, oh my God, this amazing collection that's going to be in a museum one day or whatever.
Geppi.
Geppi, yeah. But honestly, I've heard about it from talking to people in the comics industry, but Jonathan Ross's collection is supposed to be legendary. He's the British TV host, chat show host, and he wrote Turf for Image Comics. He has an entire room in his house, a very large room dedicated to comics, and it's like pristine and it's all like up on the wall. And another case of somebody who's made a lot of money and spent it on
Cage.
Comics. But Nick Cage, he sold it.
Did he? He actually? Did he actually find a buyer?
Yeah, no. And then he tried to buy stuff back, didn't he? Like that was because he saw when he was with
Season of the Witch did well. I need to buy Superman back.
When he was with Presley, didn't she make him sell it?
Yes.
Yeah.
So. She did.
That's awful.
Yeah.
Well, in terms of creators, Mark Waid apparently has a legendarily humongous collection of comics.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
But I think there's also a subculture of really, really rich guys who you don't know about.
Yep.
Who mm-hmm. collect a lot of comic stuff. Apparently, on the market of like auctions and stuff. There's a secret grouping of people that buy these things.
And there's also on the original art size. There are people I've heard rumblings and stuff like that. There are people who just buy every page from Landmark issues. Like they have the entire issue.
A couple of guys who have amazing art collections are Phil Hester and Eric Larson.
Yes.
You see them talking to each other on Twitter every once in a while about pages they have, and it's jaw-dropping.
Yep.
It's amazing. When I was a little kid, I went to a comic exhibit at the Portland Museum of Art in Portland, Maine, and they had two pages from The Dark Knight Returns, and I still remember looking at them. I could tell you which pages they were, and it was like – it was transformative.
Yeah.
Like I work in comics now, so – Like, and I remember that. I was like 12, and I was like, those are so good looking.
So next week we'll go back to your emails and voicemails. So be sure to write in at contact@fanboy.com and call in at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. We're overdue, so call in with your questions. We want to hear from you, and we'll get them on the show more in October. So yay.
Now that our long national nightmare is over.
We really can't complain about having to read too many comics.
I know,
I had a good time. Except for this week. This week was rough, but the first 3 weeks were fun.
Yeah, I had a good time.
It'll be nice to pick and choose a little more, is what I'm saying.
I have to go back and listen to the shows to remember which ones I'm picking up.
Yeah, I know.
There's going to be a lot of decisions at the store. You're like, I don't know if I liked it that much.
On Wednesday, we went through the all 52 at the store, and as opposed to doing keeping or not keeping, we did marry, kill, or fuck. Which made it a lot more fun. Which was,
yeah. I might buy Superman 2.
just out of curiosity.
Oh, it's self-mutilation. That's self-mutilation.
Fuck it.
Yeah, fucking fuck
okay.
it.
Okay.
I can't. Is that worse than the Walk Across America? I don't know. Like, it's new lows of
what do you think?
That. Yeah. We got podcasts coming up, by the way, people. Just this Don't Miss podcast that comes out every Monday. This week we're talking to Josh Fialkoff about his image book, Last of the Greats. We just talked about his work with iVampire, and you'll see his name around a lot more. But this is his big new series for Image. We've been doing Talksplode podcasts too, which are interview shows. This last week we had J.H. Williams III and W. Hayden Blackman, who did the new Batwoman issue and series. And we also talked to Mitch Gerrits about The Activity, which is a series he's doing, creator-owned series with Nathan Edmondson. And there's a first ever preview of that book
from Image Comics.
From Image. Those were fun conversations. Then next week I've got another one coming out on Thursday. That I don't believe you're going to want to miss. It's a Making Comics conversation with Blair Butler and Charles Soule. And we talk about getting started making comics, writing them, most specifically how it works with different publishers, especially Image, because that's sort of the one real place to get it done in a professional way. It was a long conversation, and it was a lot of craft and a lot of business stuff, and it was really interesting.
So was it not Alan Moore?
He didn't show up.
He was supposed to, though, but yeah.
I couldn't figure out Skype.
Jeez. All right, and you can find all of that at ifanboy.com, which is the website we call home. You can find all those podcasts, the Talksplodes and Don't Misses, as well as the Pick of the Week, the review, my review of The Flash this week, as well as all the previous other Picks of the Weeks, including other great articles by Paul and Jim and Mike and everybody else on the iFanboy writing staff. Some great comic book discussion going on recently. So you definitely want to check that out. Go to ifanboy.com/about where you can see all the links to our staff and the various social networks links. You can follow us on Twitter and places like that. Be sure to follow iFanboy on Twitter at twitter.com/iFanboy or stay in touch on facebook.com/iFanboy. We also do a video show. It comes out every Wednesday. Last week, we took a look at Brian K. Vaughan's career. And now that he's back to comics, it's good to start talking about him again. And next week, we're doing a little bit of an anthology. Josh, you're going to be talking about some lettering effects. I'm going to go stop by APE, the Alternative Press Expo here in San Francisco. And Paul returns to the show with something you're not going to want to miss. So definitely tune into that on Wednesday.
You can contact us at ifanboy.com via email or leave us a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. We will be returning to this stuff on the show because we can't continue to read and talk about this many comics. Yeah. It's too much. Can't have it.
Yep.
People always say, you talk about more books, this is why we can't.
Exactly.
Finally, if you liked your show on this show or the Don't Miss show or the video show or any of the shows you listen to, write a review on iTunes. It's how people find their podcast. It's how you can give back just a little bit without very much effort. Just go on iTunes and write a review. It doesn't even have to be a good one. We'd like a good one, but be honest. Be honest in your review, or don't.
It's not like we don't deserve somebody being honest about how they feel about us at this point.
Exactly. So please go on iTunes and tell people what you think. It really helps them. We thank you very much. Even better is to tell your friends, your comic store owner, buddies, your mom, because moms like to hear about Josh fucking Superman.
That's a weird grouping of words.
Yeah. It's an all-ages show, except when it's not.
I don't have the bleep ready at all.
Anyway. Well, I just want to congratulate you guys. We did it. We survived it. We managed through September.
Read a lot of comics. It was very difficult.
We heeded the call. We took it. And so I think maybe next week we should kind of revisit and identify our numbers of how many we're sticking with. I think that'll be interesting, how many we're going to stick with and how many we're not going to and that sort of thing.
Six.
I think I had six this week.
I forgot my number. Yeah. Anyway, so until next week we're going to be back to our normal hour or so, just under an hour length. This will be the last of the extended September episodes. We hope you all enjoyed it. So until then, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I'm Josh, and thank you.